car, and I don't have a license. Should I take another walk to the DMV? Get another learner's permit with a picture of me. I'd put it in my wallet along with my $4, and the condom that's still in there that is probably expired. I'd leave home for New York, but New York is where I'm from. I'm just looking for a way to feel my life has begun. Living in the city where I'm working like a walrus, but man, I don't need your money, man, I'm gonna be an artist. And I'm feeling like I wanna do whatever I feel inside. I put it all on paper and I'll hope that people buy it. And my only minor worry is how to pay the rent, but that won't even matter when I lose my apartment. And I'll really have no worries, I'll be just like a cassette that you've taped up the tabs of to put something new
you
on it.
You are listening when I hear to record, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned. KBOO, the best in community radio.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host this evening, and our topic is Kaiser Nurses Ready to Strike. Our guests this evening are Hannah Winchester and Serena Rower. Did I pronounce that right? Mm-hmm. Of OFNHP, the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals. Good evening, Hannah and Serena. How are you?
Hello, hello. How are you?
Good to have you here. OFNHP represents nurses and professionals at Kaiser hospitals and clinics in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Hannah is a home physical therapist, and Serena is, I didn't ask you. Tell me what your position is.
I am a nurse care coordinator in the emergency room.
Nurse care coordinator. And you're both shop stewards and right in the thick of the struggle for decent working conditions and patient care. Let's start with the headlines. OFNHP members recently voted by 95%, is that right? Or was it more than that? 95%. To authorize 96%.
Yeah, even better.
Authorize a strike. And not only that, but you had like 90% of your members turn out to vote. A huge.
Be incredible.
So which could kick off soon if the company doesn't come to its senses. Kaiser nurses have not been on strike since 1988, if I'm not mistaken. So I remember
that. Right.
I was on that picket line back in the day. I've been around that long. And so let's start with what brought you all to this point. Either one of you can start. Jump in.
Well, you know, really the lack of progression of progressive bargaining at the table. They really came ill-prepared, not really interested in moving any meaningful topics, especially around safe staffing. And they just weren't engaging. And so we feel like we had no choice than to apply a little pressure.
Can you talk a little bit about, Serena, about what do you think brought Kaiser nurses to the point of 96% strike authorization?
Well, I'm the chair of the bargaining unit for the professionals, and I have, a lot of different disciplines in my bargaining unit. I have physical therapists like Hannah, nurse care coordinators like myself, social workers, mental health therapists. I have a wide variety of disciplines, and I know that in every setting, across every discipline, we are all feeling burnout, moral injury, concern that if we do not secure the kind of contract and parameters that we're asking for, that we will not be able to provide safe, ethical care, and that the work environment will not be sustainable. So that is what I believe brought 896 of my approximate 1,100 members to vote, and 832 of them voted yes.
You have something you want to add to that, Hannah?
I think that the overwhelming majority of people, that astounding 90% of people coming and voting, that astounding 96% of people saying yes, shows that this is widespread. This is a boiling point, that everyone recognizes how dangerous these proposals could be, not just for us, but mostly for our patients. And all recognize that this is the time that we have to stand up and say, this is not, we're not willing to sacrifice. We're not willing to accept subpar, do better.
So what is it that the company is bringing to the table that's made people so angry or resistant?
What are they not bringing? And that's good. That's everything. Kind of like what Serena said, the silence and the limited conversation, the limited proposals. We put forward 13 pages. They give us a one-sided couple of sentences. And that's not engaged. That's not good faith bargaining. And I don't think that that's really recognizing the severity of the situation at hand, the complexity of the conversation that we should be having across the board. You know, we're not bargaining for just a raise. That's not it. And we're bargaining about workplace safety. We're bargaining about social and racial justice. We're bargaining about, you know, staffing and retention and all of these huge ticket items that you can't put on a one-sided sheet of paper. It's not enough.
Is an important part of this that they want to lower standards, both wages and compensation for new hires? Is that right?
So Hannah explained a lot of what's going on at the local table, but at the national table, which affects every Alliance member, which is, you know, over 50,000 of us, is across the board a disrespectful proposal of 1% across the board, like a 1% lump sum. And historically, we've gotten at least 3%. And just last year, I think it was that they signed a contract with other unions within Kaiser Permanente, a 3%. A disrespectful 1% plus a two-tier system on top of it. Just a slap in the face.
So the nursing shortage has increased drastically during the COVID pandemic, with nurses out sick and quarantining and quitting due to stress. And I've heard that over half of nurses are considering leaving the profession. Talk about that.
Yeah. As I said before, moral injury is real. It was real before the pandemic. Let's be real. Healthcare is a business. And when you get into this profession to take care of people in our communities, and you start realizing year by year, metric by metric, that this is a business and a lot of people are in it to check boxes and fatten their wallets, it just takes a little bit away at a time. So we were already feeling morally injured before the pandemic. Then the pandemic hits. Our nation is ill-prepared. Our hospitals are ill-prepared. We were ill-prepared to handle this level of stress, distress. And so I think it's just all of those things combined is really what is causing it.
And I think it would be very easy to say, and with what we've talked about with our members and with my colleagues, and is that it's not just nurses, it's everyone mm-hmm. in healthcare. I know nurses are kind of like a hot button topic and it's easy to track and they're a large entity, but this is global. This is everyone that's at the table. This is everybody that's talking right now. It's very global.
And can I just add one thing, Jamie? Is that, yes, the pandemic has really exacerbated the situation of the nursing shortage, the healthcare worker shortage. But this shortage, the year 2020, has been predicted for 2 decades. And the fact that we entered the pandemic so lean staffed that it really just, the pandemic really just kind of pushed us off the cliff. We were already skating on very, very thin ice.
Can you tell us a little bit about what, I mean, on the ground, how does that play out, having a shortage of nurses? What does understaffing actually look like on a day-to-day basis? Either one of you.
So having a nursing shortage is a problem because they deliver that direct, they're responsible during their shift often for all of the patient's care, right? But they rely so heavily on all the ancillary services and the other professionals and the people we collaborate with, like physical therapy and speech and dietitians and all of those things, that we could never, as a nurse at the bedside, take care of the patients, all of the patient's needs. So take all the shortages of the ancillary staff. Now all of those responsibilities lie on the nurse. Then the patient, then she has that times 4 or 5 patients. So it's a compounding situation. It's not like one thing. It's so many things that could potentially really impact the patient and make it unsafe for everybody.
And what you start seeing is you see people that are working 7 days a week. You see people that are working far past normal hours. You see people that are giving up a work-life balance of any sort. People that are working themselves into the ground because they see it is very difficult for healthcare workers to walk away from a patient in need. Like that is our essence. That is why we got into this. And so we go without to sacrifice ourselves to make sure that those needs are met. And you know, your gas tank is only as big as you can make it. And when it's empty, it's empty. But we'll empty ourselves to do that.
Well, and it's bound to have an impact on the quality of care. And you just
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's why we are fighting for this contract to address those issues, to provide a space that is sustainable.
So when Kaiser and other healthcare companies are dealing with the nursing shortage, they bring in travelers, what are called travelers or temporary agency nurses. And how much do they pay these travelers? And how does the system, this system of bringing in travelers, impact patient care?
So what Serena just said was it's not sustainable. And it's not sustainable. You know, if you do the math, what we've been able to see kind of what the going rates are for here just down the hall of travel nurses. And it's, I mean, 3 times what a normal staff nurse would be paid. There was an ad that went out for a 60-hour work week for an emergency room nurse for $10,000 a week, wow, which is astronomical. And it's not being a good steward of resources. It's not sustainable. It's, you know, a lot of times these people are given very quickly escalated training and onboarding. You know, having someone that knows this system and knows this place can obviously provide so much better care than someone that is, you know, here and gone in just a couple of weeks. And that's not to say that person isn't educated or talented. It's just we recognize that having permanent staff and having people that know this system is obviously the best quality care that we can give. And it's quickly becoming way of life is to just staff as travelers and staff as travelers instead of unfortunately going back and saying, why can't we get permanent people here? Why can't we get people to stay? Why can't we get people through the door? It's a very band-aided fix.
I'll add too that I would not say that there's zero place for travelers, right? We do have a situation where we might need a short term, like a maternity leave kind of situation where a traveler is quite appropriate. However, when it is the core staff is made up of travelers, that's the problem, right? Because you don't have the right skill mix. You don't have that feeling of building morale and camaraderie. You just don't have that. That's lost. You don't have the trust of the healthcare worker next to you that you really need to provide the best care.
You just tuned in. You're listening to KBOO Portland Labor Radio. Our guests are Hannah Winchester and Serena Rower of the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals. And what about new, I know there's a lot, because of the shortage, and there's a push to bring in new and even student nurses and being moved into difficult care situations that they're not ready for. What about that? Is that happening in Kaiser?
Yeah, I mean, talk about getting thrown into the fire. I think that, you know, there's definitely been situations where experience levels might be flexed a little bit due to the crisis need. And that's kind of scary as a patient. You know, we're all Kaiser patients as well. Majority of us are, you know, we're Kaiser patients as well. We don't just want it for our patients. We want it for ourselves as well, to know that somebody that's taking care of us is qualified and knowledgeable. Why are we being put in this situation? How did we get here to where we're having to ask people day one to do something that they normally wouldn't do until year three? Mm-hmm. You've got to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And being a nurse for 16 years now, I still haven't forgotten my first day on the floor. And I feel at my point in my career that I owe it to my profession to pay it forward, right? I've never forgotten that, what it feels like, how terrified I was, all of those things. And what we are trying to do is earn a contract that addresses these issues of skill mix, addresses the ability for the senior nurse or physical therapist or whoever, whatever discipline, to really be able to spend that time and the quality to really mentor and bring up the young, instead of feeling so stressed and spread so thin and so understaffed in conditions that are not safe at baseline. That's why we're fighting for this contract, so that we can eliminate that environment and create an environment that has some boundaries and guardrails, so that the new, more senior can bring up the young. Sorry, that was very long-winded.
That's great. What's the connection between compensation and understaffing? How would making more decent compensation, wages, benefits have an impact on this understaffing situation?
So it certainly isn't going to bring people in the door. If you're looking at and healthcare professionals, I mean, there is a lot of opportunity there right now. A lot of times people are able to pick between four and five jobs. It's not just take the first thing that's offered to you. And so when you're going through and you're looking at all of these offers, are you going to take the place that has a 1% raise and 25% less than senior staff as for an hourly rate? Or are you going to take the place that's offering sign-on bonuses, that's offering 3% raises, that's offering an actual competitive market wage to our market, not what Kaiser continues to talk about as our market, but it's actually completely inappropriate. It's, you know, rural hospitals, it's things that aren't actually really one-to-one. People are obviously going to take a higher wage. And you can't get people to stay if you can't get them to walk in. So we've got to be able to bring them here. And we've got to be able to keep them here as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So you're ready to strike? So how will a strike pressure the company to do the right thing?
let me be clear. I am ready to strike if I have to, if I'm pushed to. If Kaiser makes me, I will. Do I want to? I want to get a fair, respectable contract. That's what I want to do. But will I strike? Abso-freaking-lutely.
So looking at the strike, how would that pressure the company to do the right thing?
If I had to say, do I think that they could survive without us? I would be very worried what that would look like for patients that would still have to be there, for patients that still need care. You know, that's concerning. But I think the amount of people that are turning out, not just for our strike vote, the amount of people that are turning out for our other region strike votes, the amount of people that are coming together to our rally, the amount of people that are in our community coming to our assistance, you know, the media coverage, all of this, it's not just our strike vote, it's the amount of people that are all behind us saying, they're doing this for us, we support them, you need to start acting appropriately. And I think a strike would be one tool in that tool bag, but I think it's all of it kind of combined that really is putting the pressure on them to have a productive conversation, which I don't know if we've really been able to see yet.
Well, when you look at the Nabisco strike, a manufacturing company where going on strike obviously shuts down production and their source of income. But with Kaiser, the patients and companies pay forward the premium. So it's not like by striking, you're not cutting off their source of income. You are going after their image. Yeah, you're trying to tarnish their public image as a good employer or as a good provider of quality care. And you're trying to influence the companies that do business with Kaiser, I suppose. Is that right?
I mean, maybe that's one way to look at it. But for me, like, I work here. I want to be proud of the place that I work. I want my family receives care here. I receive care here. I want it to be the best place to work. And I feel like the strike and the community, like all the things that we're doing or potentially going to do, is only to make this place better. It's only to make our community better, only to create a safer place for our patients. That's it.
So the naysayers, you know, the corporate media will say, well, if you want better patient care, why would you go on strike? You're just going to hurt your patients. What's your answer?
We didn't choose to go on strike. They forced us to go on strike. We have all taken some sort of oath as a healthcare worker to protect our patients. And I'm not going to break that oath and what I believe is right for my patients to protect them just to sign a contract. That's inappropriate. And so I can understand how they would like to shift the blame, but the blame is really on Kaiser. That's not us. We didn't choose to be here. We would love to have already settled our contract. We would love to have already be talking about ratification and signed it on the dotted line and have all of that finished. We would love nothing more. I don't want to lose a paycheck. I don't want to walk away from my patients. But it's that pivotal moment where you have to do what's right for the future. Not just for ourselves, but for our patients as well.
And if you go on strike, what do you want patients, Kaiser patients like myself, members, pro-union, want to support you? What do you want us to do?
So, you know, if we end up going on strike, we are obviously going to be out on a picket line. You have mentioned before that you have joined a few of those yourself, and it will absolutely, we would welcome any person to come and join us, any person, even if they want to come talk, ask questions, hear our story, know what we're fighting for, we would be more than happy to have those conversations. Just yesterday, OFNHP put out a GoFundMe page that was for financial hardship support for those that potentially might need that if they go out on the strike line and obviously lose their income for a period of time. You know, that obviously would be a really direct line of support. And, you know, talk with your healthcare workers, talk with, if you are a Kaiser member and you're concerned about this, you absolutely can reach out and ask, or state what you want. State what you want. Our patient should always be our focus. And what you want should always be our focus, and what you need should always be our focus. And so please feel free to speak up and have your voice heard as well, and let Kaiser know how and why you believe that and what it's going to take to keep you a Kaiser patient.
And I would say that Hannah's absolutely right. I agree with her 100%. The patient is the center, is definitely always the center. What I would ask our community members like yourself that support us, I would ask that you don't feel some type of way about crossing the picket line. We want you to stay healthy. We want you to get the care that you pay for and deserve. We want you to do all the things to keep yourself healthy and the community. So I just don't want anybody to feel that burden of crossing the picket line. That's what I would ask. And plus all the things that Hannah said.
And so besides joining a picket line and crossing the picket line, you want us to express our support for the UFNHP members to Kaiser management, however that's, well, whether it's in the facilities themselves, asking to talk to managers, and I suppose there's also a big CEO or whoever that you would like us to get in touch with, am I right?
Yeah, and we've made it pretty easy for our community to do that. If you join us on the Facebook page or reach out on our website, we have a very easy click and go kind of QR code or link that can give you the all the details around how you could do that and who to reach out to.
And so that's
ofnhp.org.
ofnhp.org. Mm-hmm. Both the GoFundMe and who to contact to complain about their treatment of the staff.
And right? Even if you don't have a complaint and you just really just support us and what we're trying to do for our community and our patients, you don't have to have a complaint. You can just show your sign of support by doing the same thing.
Great. Well, I know a number of pro-union, pro-healthcare activists like myself, but also folks from other healthcare unions, from the Medicare for All community, from DSA, Progressive Community, they're all ready to help out and possibly fill in with actions that striking union members cannot do to put pressure on Kaiser management to do the right thing. So how do you think improving staffing and compensation at Kaiser will impact healthcare providers in other big companies like Providence and Legacy and Oregon Health and Sciences University? What do you think?
I mean, I think we have a huge influence on community standard of care. You know, I think that they're all in competition. You know, what's good for us is really good for all. And that's not just fellow healthcare workers, that's our community as well. You know, we're serving the community. So I think that a win for us would protect quality healthcare, would prevent other systems from trying to create a two-tiered system, a two-tiered wage system. I think that it would really maintain healthcare workers' ability to provide patient care. By having appropriate staffing and having appropriate workplace dynamics.
Kaiser has kind of set the bar, right? They're one of the biggest healthcare organizations. And honestly, if we want to lead the way, and we are able to get a good contract and set standards and continue to raise the bar, I mean, that's the impact, because all eyes are on us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if our listeners want to keep in touch, and especially if they want to get involved, they should go to ofnhp.org.
Mm-hmm. They could also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Well, that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Hannah Winchester and Serena Rower of the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals, ready to strike at Kaiser. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Iron Tribe emerged from the vision of two men as they served time in Oregon prison. Upon release from prison, they developed an innovative and effective transitional housing solution for others who re-entered their communities after involvement with the criminal legal system. Today, Iron Tribe Network offers peer support, recovery programs, family reunification services, and operates recovery and wellness homes in four Oregon counties. My guest is Sean Bauer, co-founder and executive director of Iron Tribe Network. Welcome, Sean.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sean, you co-founded Iron Tribe in 2009, and your story is a remarkable story. You conceived the idea of